When you called me last June to be your interim pastor, you got a pastor smitten with the harmony between Christianity and nonviolent communication. And in me, you get a pastor who sees an unbroken lineage, a chain of learning from the Hebrew Bible prophets to Jesus, whose ministry is heavily informed by the prophets, to Paul, a devout Jew converted to Jesus' path. And I'm skipping over some other thinkers here, like Anne Hutchinson and Sarah and Angelina Grimke, Harriet Tubman and Antoinette Brown, to get to Mohandas Gandhi, a Hindu who was inspired by Jesus' nonviolence, to Martin Luther King Jr., who was inspired by both Jesus and Gandhi, who argued that the Gandhian philosophy was the only morally and practically sound method to open to oppressed people in their struggle for freedom, to, one more, Marshall Rosenberg, a Jew, who was also inspired by Gandhi and King. And I want to pause to mourn that in all these names at the bookends, they're men. And I want to hold that as those carrying forward the work of abolishing racism and sexism and othering of all sorts, we can be proud that today we have people of all genders as leaders. Rosenberg's nonviolent communication, which I prefer to call empowering communication, is grounded in five things. And I want to invite you to notice how nonviolent communication and Christianity are so compatible. One, a consciousness grounded in the spirit or something greater than ourselves, something transcendent. That's true of nonviolent communication and Christianity. Two, how we use language, that is words. And three, other language such as body language. Didn't Jesus ask us to take notice of not of what we put into our mouths, but what comes out of our mouths, our words, our actions? Four, a willingness to examine how we use power. Didn't Jesus call us to consider our allegiance and to render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's? That's asking us to consider how we use power. And the fifth is a willingness to examine what we have learned from secular to our faith communities. Didn't Jesus question the law, what had been handed to him, what he had learned, what seemed unquestioned by others? So we are encouraged in nonviolent communication and in our Christian tradition to question all of these things, to examine all of these things. And you hired me to understand the divisions at Three Crosses, the conflict, to help heal, so you can reconnect with what God is doing in your midst, so you can create a vision of your future that is grounded in the divine, in love. From my perspective, we are in between the first and second parts of this year. We have begun to name the conflict and deal openly and honestly with each other about it. We are moving to reconciliation and healing, but I don't perceive we're there yet. And we are not yet looking to the future and dreaming into it. We are in between. I'm leaving time at the end of the sermon to hear from you about what this place we are in feels like. I invite you to pay attention to your body and its feelings as I talk about this transition we're in, and to share this at the end of the sermon. So on the screen, you can see William Bridges' graphic about moving through transition. On the left, the vertical axis is how many people at any given time are in the place of thinking about ending the loss, what's behind us. What percentage, what group of people are in the neutral zone, the in-between, and which group of people are ready for what's new? And so you can see there's a much greater number of people on the left-hand side at the beginning of transition who are still thinking about endings and loss. And as you move Horizontally, the horizontal axis is about time passing, the transition happening over time. And you see that as you move from left to right, there's many more people who then enter the neutral zone. And when you get to the end of the transition, the goal is to have the bulk of the group in ready for the new beginning. Generally, we do not enjoy being in the neutral zone, where we experience some anxiety and lack of motivation. One writer says the neutral zone is like being between trapezes, having let go of one and you haven't yet grabbed on to the next one. It's Linus when his blanket is in the dryer. There's nothing to hold on to. A French novelist writes, "One doesn't discover new lands without consenting to lose sight of the shore for a very long time. Losing sight of the shore is also finding oneself in the neutral zone." So let's start with 1 Corinthians and the conflict we read about today, and then think about our transition. There are many things I value in the Apostle Paul, but I disagree with Paul that there should be no divisions in a faith community. No divisions is certainly what Jesus hoped for when he expressed a desire that they all be one in the Gospel of John. And I trust Paul could envision it too, harmonious communities working together toward a world where love is embodied by all Christians. But no divisions is a pie-in-the-sky idea of a church community. I believe all churches need a common mission, and Three Crosses has one, an ever-widening inclusive Christian community. We are called to transform ourselves and our world to embody God's radical love, healing, and hope. This is an umbrella statement of who we are together, but we, the actors of the church in everyday life, in study, fellowship, committees, we are going to be flawed. And we will experience conflict. And there is also good news. Through the incredible varied church history that includes the Roman Catholic Church, the various Protestant iterations of Christianity, and new ways of being Christian and worshiping being forged today, and the support of such prophets as King and spiritual leaders like Rosenberg, we have lots of resources at hand. There are resources for us to use when conflict is small and when it's big. We have resources to examine what stimulated the conflict. That is how people interacted with Brit and how Brit interacted with people. And ways to address this pain that neither blames nor shames and also values accountability. We're beginning to employ these tools. The nonviolent communication model, which has a spiritual foundation, one harmonious with Christianity, has been employed around the world in many ways. I want to share about one school in Brazil. The space where people come together in conflict is named the fight room. But what happens in the fight room is not the kind of fighting we see on our TV police shows or in a James Bond movie, but instead, it's honest emotions, distress, anger, fury, aloneness, hurt, but absent a physical fight. In our culture, maybe the most especially in our churches, we very often don't know how to deal with conflict, so we just avoid it until we are in such turmoil that our reptilian brain takes over and we want to do the other in, or declare the outcome by fiat, or walk away. How many of us have entertained that peace would come about in our places of work, our politics, our church, if only so-and-so might leave? This is called cutoff. It is not what Jesus did or wished for in my reading of Jesus. Actually, he got closer and closer to conflict. The name The Fight Room helps set the tone that honesty is essential. That we are battling to be heard for what is most important to us, what we are valuing. Not, however, to be right, and not to do the other person in. The kind of honesty we are going for does not tell the other person or persons what's wrong with them. It is honesty that shares our inner life. It is honesty that might include our fury, anger, concern, but it also includes what we're valuing. For example, care is a need. Respect is a need. Respect for people, for boundaries, for roles. Equality is a need. Equality meaning that all voices matter, yours and those you profoundly disagree with. And let's not forget the beauty of the needs of accountability and self-responsibility. In this honesty, we are sharing what we value without our sharing becoming demanding, without attachment to our preferred outcome, without attachment to our preferred outcome. That's really, really hard. Today at Three Crosses, we have begun some truth-telling, first in the interviews, then in the pre-circles, and then in the restorative circle, part one. My deep sense is that we have more work to do before our hearts and minds are more closely aligned, as needs to happen, before a future is envisioned, a profile is created, and a pastor is called. I'm not suggesting we should have gotten to this place by now. I'm simply naming where we are descriptively. We are in the neutral zone, and it feels pretty awful. In the circle on December 11th, I heard some people express fear that if we don't move through this process of reconciliation with care and honesty and accountability, the conflict that occurred could and likely would occur again. This is a reasonable fear in my view of people and conflict, and I believe those voices urge us to complete the circle and our other work that needs to happen before we emerge from the neutral zone, with care and without haste. One thing that makes church conflict difficult is that, and I'm making a judgment here, too prevalent in Christianity is a belief that we have to be varnished and good as evidence that we are Christian. And this is exacerbated by the internet, which is replete with Facebook facades of perfection that we project out into the world. And this facade serves to squelch us from revealing our whole selves that include our pain and heartache. We are afraid to say something to others that others will judge as unchristian. And the reason for this is that we are no dummies. We have experienced the world, that when we are honest and vulnerable, others might pounce on us. They might punish or retaliate. We don't know how to be honest about our anger and fear, taking responsibility for our feelings without blaming others. We don't know how to hear others' honesty, however painful it is to hear it. We do not know how to hear them without dismissing them. We do not know how to move closer to the conflict as Jesus did, and hear with compassion what another is valuing behind their very difficult words. And I do not mean to set myself on a pedestal, because while I have been working on this consciousness and these skills for 21 years, I am also still working on this as an individual in real time in the real world. In the current cancel culture world, we have to be on the right side of things or we might be punished or canceled. But if we adopt this thinking, we are sinking into the paradigm of right and wrong, in and out, belonging or outcast. This is not the paradigm Jesus brought. Cancel culture means right speech and wrong speech, good people and bad people. This is not what Jesus, Gandhi, King, and Rosenberg taught me. My college has a quarterly newsletter, and in the winter edition last year, two professors are featured because they were and are deeply concerned about external censoring and self-censoring by professors in the classroom. This kind of censoring seems to have reached every community and classroom in the nation. In the article I read, the professors are addressing the shortcomings of the diversity training they have experienced. The professors' names are Khalid and Snyder. Khalid and Snyder have variously questioned the effectiveness of diversity training on campus and the need for trigger warnings in the classroom. They have defended the Western canon of classic literature and challenged the tenor and tone of contemporary anti-racist discourse. And while being quoted by conservative and liberal outlets, that's interesting in and of itself, being quoted by conservative and liberal outlets, they both see themselves politically and personally as people of the left who are compelled to challenge a kind of reactionary progressivism inside and outside of the academy that they worry renders too many topics in the polarized present untouchable. That's the end of the quote of that paragraph. The pitfalls they find in diversity training in the classroom are primarily two: oversimplification and demonization of subjects and others. Oversimplification and demonization. I would argue these tendencies to oversimplify and demonize can be extrapolated to just about any controversial subject in a company, halls of Congress, etc. And the antidote is to look at situations and people, valuing complexity with a willingness not to oversimplify. I believe this is what the Spirit, God's presence in Christianity and nonviolent communication does. This approach, I believe, is the best path to serve Three Crosses. As I wrote in a fall newsletter, we don't know if Three Crosses is going to make it or not. Now, that phrase deserves to be unpacked. Making it might mean many different things. A congregation is an organism and is not unlike the growth of a human. A cell biologist wrote in the New York Times recently about the growth of an embryo, the complex joining of egg and sperm, the growth of these two cells into 10, 100, 1,000, that over months, muscle cells emerge, replicate, grow into tissue, that eventually gain varying capacities, eventually movement at 3 or 4 months, and so on to nerves and networks of nerves, to birth and consciousness. That being human has to do with awareness of one's existence in relationship to the world. I submit that growth for the church is very much like an organism, complex. What does growth and survival mean? That Three Crosses will grow to a membership of 120 and gain financial stability in the next 5 years? Maybe. Maybe growth means merging with another congregation. Maybe growth means ministry in a different location and or worship that looks quite different from what it does now. Maybe it means noticing the epidemic of loneliness in our culture and using our space to bring people together in ways that are both secular and Christian. Maybe it means selling the building and funding other ministries we already support, or the endowment of another congregation or a church camp. I believe in every scenario, there is the possibility of good news, because good news means that God is by our side as we discern the future together. We are in the neutral zone, and it feels so uncomfortable because we have not yet entertained and put on the table the many ways forward. I sense goodwill and passion for Three Crosses from everyone, but we are not yet of one mind. We are still searching for what our new covenant together will be. I believe we have the capacity to heal. I believe we will need every member of this congregation to be part of the healing, to be willing to express themselves, hear others, and take self-responsibility for their words, their actions that stimulated or stimulate hurt in others. We need to figure out what the new covenant looks like. As an example of what it will be, what will become, dreaming into the future, I want to share my friend Joel's dream. that has become my dream too. Joel is my Lutheran clergy friend with whom I teach nonviolent communication to clergy. If we can bring a restorative system of reconciliation to a church, then we should be able to bring it to the neighborhood of that church and a greater metropolitan area of that neighborhood. In this dream, people living in a church's neighborhood, such as community groups, a business, anyone with conflict, might know of their neighborhood church as a place of reconciliation and come to the church for support. The dream is about Jesus longing that they may all be one. For this dream to come true in the form of people, a building, and the process of building a beloved community. This is a big dream. I get chills thinking about it. I trust that in the Restorative Circle Part 3 and the retreat and other discussions, your dream will emerge. The great news is that we do not have to take on these challenges alone. In the words of Bishop Oscar Romero, we cannot do everything. And there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. This enables us to do something and to do it very well. Amen.